From WXXI News. News is the word. WXXI knows. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and it is a Monday. Our connection this hour was made in New York City, where the CEO of one of the world's largest commercial landlords was busy making frantic phone calls. As NPR reports, Jeff Blau was trying to convince other CEOs to get their vaccinated workers back in the office. No more working from home, no more remote options. As Blau sees it, and as he told NPR, there is a civic responsibility for companies to pull their workforce back into the physical office settings. Otherwise, cities across the country will see offices collapse, and the result, he says, will be potentially devastating. Hollowed out shells of buildings collecting dust, but not collecting tax revenue for their local governments. A ripple effect on nearby businesses that rely on foot traffic. A painful hit to local restaurant scenes. No one knows if Blau is going to be successful, but it's clear that more workers than ever before are planning to continue with remote work if they can, even after the pandemic subsides. And a growing list of big companies are making changes based on what they have learned. NPR reports that Facebook, for example, has said that it expects about half of its workforce to work from home in the future. Twitter, Zappos, and Slack all saying the same thing. Pinterest just paid $90 million to get out of its lease at a big building in downtown San Francisco. Moody's is forecasting a 21% drop in advertised rent for new commercial listings in New York City this year. That's worse than the 19% drop over the worst stretch of the financial crisis that began in 2008. So what happens to all of this office space? Can we reimagine it? Can we find a solution for young workers who do want remote flexibility while local governments need to find productive uses for millions of square feet? Our guests this hour are already considering these questions, and I welcome them now. Anna Liss is the Director of Planning and Economic Development for Monroe County. Anna, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Evan Galina is a Senior Project Manager with Galina Development. Evan, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Ralph Dandrea is CEO of ITX Corporation. Ralph, welcome. Thanks for being with us. Are you there, Ralph? He might be on mute. Did you start the hour?
I'm not anymore. I'm here.
Hey, it's a Monday, man. You heard how we all started the hour. Ralph, let me just ask you briefly to tell our listeners what ITX is and how long you've been sort of grappling with the juggling that some employees want remote, some want a more centralized setting.
Sure. Well, we've been around for almost 24 years developing custom software for our clients, mostly in the product space. So we build software products for other companies. And we've had remote people since 1998.
And remote since 98, but, I mean, is it a majority? I mean, how does the workforce typically want to do its work?
Well, we originally were more focused on being co-located with our clients, but then we realized that wasn't necessary, and we were able to find more talent faster by not being tied to a specific location. So right now we're about 40% in office, 60% remote. Well, that was pre-COVID. Now it's much higher than that because most of our people are working from home still. But we do expect to return probably to that balance because it's not really so much a question of whether someone's remote or not. It's not binary. It's what percentage of the time they're remote is really what's changing.
Analysts, when you hear the way NPR frames this story, you know, talking, especially in New York City, and I know Rochester and Monroe County is not New York City, but, you know, you look around the country and certainly there are signs that the impact post-pandemic will be potentially stressful for local governments trying to figure out, are we really going to see companies, number one, close because they couldn't stay open, but also, are we going to see workforces go more mobile? What happens to all this space? I mean, does this strike you as an opportunity or a massive headache?
Well, one constant throughout the upheavals of 2020 was the steady stream of media reports about residents fleeing dense urban areas and then suggestions that remote work freed up office workers from long commutes, allowing them to relocate, putting the future of commercial real estate in question. But here in Rochester, you pointed out, you know, we're not New York City, we're not Boston. For several years running, developers like Galena, you know, Evan and his team have been redeveloping space in our urban core and elsewhere that previously was 100% office or manufacturing and is now mixed use. Recent examples of projects that we at the county have worked on in partnership with developers like Galena and others in that community include redevelopment of the iconic Aqueduct building into a co-working space. Evan's going to talk about their plans for a former Xerox Tower, turning it into Innovation Square. We've been redeveloping existing legacy industrial space and logistical infrastructure previously used in manufacturing to accommodate e-commerce projects. E-commerce is in huge demand. And then, of course, transforming our former mall spaces at Marketplace and in Irondequoit into affordable senior housing, community gathering spaces, et cetera. So for a long time, we've been trying to repurpose our legacy real estate here in Greater Rochester. So I think we're well positioned to accommodate this transformation.
Mm-hmm. Is there currently any sort of a glut in empty and unused office space, Anna, any more than perhaps there used to be? And I'm not just talking about during the pandemic. I mean, my favorite sandwich shop in Rochester for years was O'Bagalo's, you know, down on State Street and not far from us here at WXXI. And right across the way was this gorgeous building that was two-thirds empty. And John Vito over at O'Bagalo's used to tell me, boy, that was tough for all of us at Pizza Stop, O'Bagalo's, when two-thirds of that went empty. So I know this has been an issue and a challenge for years, but is it any different now, and do you see it becoming, you know, more severe in the next year?
Yeah, on the office commercial side of things, it's marginally worse than it was prior to the pandemic. And then when you look at retail service sector businesses and the real estate that they occupy or are not occupying anymore, it's even worse. So, I'm concerned about what the future holds for particularly our swaths of real estate in the commercial corridors in Henrietta, et cetera, where there's a lot of shopping, you know, as e-commerce continues to grow. Office-wise, I don't know I think it's a little too soon to speculate, but we're somewhat in the same boat that we were, just a little bit worse. And I'm sure Evan can speak to that from the landlord's perspective.
Yeah, Evan Galena with Galena Development. How do you see that?
So, our approach and what we've kind of talked about a lot is, let's not press the panic button yet. We need to get to the end of the pandemic, and then we need to assess the situation. In our experience, the last, 14, 15 months, industrial is pretty highly occupied. The medical space is still moving. It's that Class A office that's just been hesitant. And we haven't really had anyone just move out and say, we're done with it, we're going fully remote. But there's hesitancy there to sign new leases. And there's hesitancy how to space out employees in those spaces. You know, the trend for the last couple of years has been wide open workspace, cubicle life, a lot of flexibility, breakout rooms. And now, folks are looking at this and saying, okay, well, we need the private offices. We need people that can go in and close their door and stay separated a little more. It's just kind of figuring out that the future and what that's going to look like. And everyone's a little bit different right now.
Can I follow up on an important point here, Evan? I'm laughing because you bring up open workspaces, and yeah, I bet it was 2 or 3 years ago on this program we had a really interesting conversation about these shared workspaces, open spaces, collaborative sort of environments, and there were a lot of people who loved the idea. And then in the last year, I cannot count how many articles or even just sort of social media blasts I've read where people said, that stuff is over. That stuff doesn't work. I need privacy. I need a door. I can never get anything done. Now, again, I'm generalizing here, and somebody is going to call me or email and say, Evan, that's not true. It's great. And I think it works for some. What I think I'm hearing from you is that it may work for some, but it may not be the universal destination that maybe we thought a few years ago we're going to. And in that reason, let's not maybe assume that we can fully predict what post-pandemic life looks like for workers. Is that kind of the point you're making?
That is. I have this theory that we have a very, very short-term memory. And so once we get to the finish line of this pandemic and we put it behind us, which, will happen, I think we're going to go right back to the way that we used to operate. Personally, and it goes back to your comfort level, though. You know, you see it now with folks just starting to travel again, and you do it once and you get a little more comfortable and you start to make that progress forward. And that's what you're going to see in the office space as well. You're going to go back to the office and maybe you're going, you know, 2 days a week. And then you get a little more comfortable there and you realize that, yeah, you know, this is fine. You go 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And eventually, you know, I think that the, I think remote work has a lot of advantages. I think it also has a lot of disadvantages. And I truly think that people will return to the office in full in the next 2 to 4 years, kind of once we put this in the rears.
Matt in Canandaigua, hang there for a second. I'm going to get to our first call in a moment. Listeners, if you want to weigh in on this, on the future of work, centralized locations, how companies are going to be structured, what we do with space, if that changes, and what workers are demanding. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Let me ask Ralph if, you know, based on what NPR reported, you know, there's this more urgent concern in bigger cities, but there's this idea that some, you know, commercial landlords are saying, which is that, hey, you've got a civic responsibility to get your employees back in the office. We can't let these offices collapse. You know, you have to get them back in here. Is that a little extreme to you, Ralph? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's extreme. I don't think that there's, I mean, everybody's worried when things aren't looking so great, but, you know, I think that this has just accelerated some of the trends we've already seen happening, right? You know, the realities of the pandemic forced us to look at things in a different way. But I think you're going to see, like Evan said, by and large, a return to the office life, although the current trends of moving somewhat to remote or partially remote is going to continue. So it's almost like the stock market goes down, but it comes back and it continues its upward trend. I think you're going to see the same thing with the trends that were in play. Some of them have been accelerated, some of them have been slowed down, but I think you're going to see us return back to that.
And let me ask you all briefly about some of the comments I heard over the weekend from a couple of 70-somethings who are taking a look at this issue. Well, one of them was my dad, who is retired now and hating retirement. He was an attorney for years. He did the most mundane legal work, but he loved it. It was his life, and it wasn't all his life, but he really loved it, and he did not want to retire. And one of the last things he did working in Cleveland was help spearhead a new downtown centralized office for the firm. And most of the new recruits come in and they say, this is beautiful, but, you know, I'd like to do most of my work in a coffee shop. And he says, well, why the hell do we do all this? And it's been a jolt for him and to see that because, you know, he was in sort of maybe the older mindset. Now, Evan Galena, you're saying, you know, don't assume that that's everybody or while we may see some of that shift, you do seem to think that the concern's a little overblown, that most people are still going to go back to offices or centralized locations, Evan.
So this is kind of my approach to this, if you want to follow me for a second here. As an employer trying to attract talent, you need to differentiate yourself, and you need a competitive advantage. And so that's what a lot of these tech companies have done over the years. You see it with the Google campuses, even in the metropolitan. Datto builds out this fantastic space because they want to attract the highest and best talent out there. So you're competing directly with your competitors, of course. So, and now if you're a fully remote company and your competitor is not, and you're realizing you guys can't keep up with your competitor that's not fully remote, maybe that's part of the reason. So I think it goes back to competition in the workplace a little bit and how people are going to feed off each other that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I certainly think that's reasonable. There are also some stereotypes that I think are out there, and one of them was came from a woman I talked to this weekend. She's 70 years old, and she, you know, we were talking about this subject, and she said, "I'll tell you what I think. I think younger workers want this work from home opportunity because they're lazy and they don't want people checking up on them." I mean, that is a big, big stereotype. And I told her, frankly, that I disagreed. I think it's inevitably it's maybe true for a small subset, but I don't think it's most. I mean, Ralph, I don't think companies would survive if that were true for any large number of workers.
Well, but there is something true about what she said, and that is that the real problem with remote work that we've experienced in the past and why more companies haven't adopted it, it's a lot harder to manage people who are remote. So you have to have really good ways of measuring their productivity. You have to have ways of understanding what they're up to and are they fulfilling their potential. It's a lot easier when they're in the same location. So a lot of the demand for people to be in the office in the past has really come from lazy management, I think, because it's much easier to have someone here. You use their presence as a proxy for their attention or actual productivity. So remote work has its own challenges, and I think we're going to be working on solving that. That's not going to be solved overnight, and you're going to, and that's, I think, the real driver of why you're going to see a major, most people return back to their office environments.
I think the point you just made is absolutely central here, that it inevitably is more difficult in most cases to manage employees who are not in a centralized location. But then it becomes your job, Ralph, to come up with benchmarks or ways to know that they're doing the work, right? I mean, that's, you know, ultimately good management will, seems to me, will figure out some way to do this. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been doing that for 24 years because we've had people throughout the Americas. And there are a lot of things you take for granted when people are in the same location. You know, you can walk down the hall to grab someone when there's a problem and you need their immediate attention, or you can high five the guys next to you working on a project and you accomplish something together. You know, it's difficult to celebrate remotely. It's difficult to get people to respond quickly. You also have the other problem, which is what a lot of people are feeling right now in the pandemic is I'm home and there's no longer this thick black line between home and work. I feel like I'm working all the time because I'm always at my workplace, which is now my home. So there are a lot of challenges in terms of remote work, and we're getting on the road to solving a lot of those things. So I think the overall trend is going to be towards less work in the office, but it's just going to be just less, and it's going to be marginal, and it's going to be over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
We still need that as a crutch, I think, for a long time. And you know, and then throw on top of that the social aspect where people like to be together. You know, we've had a lot of people who want to be in the office just because they want to be in the office. With
sure.
Other people.
Yeah, in a moment I'll read a little feedback from listeners on that subject. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ralph, you have me thinking of the Bobs in Office Space where they ask, what is it that you'd say you do here? And, you know, you got to know what people are doing. And I think Ralph is offering some wise ideas for how managers can do that. It's not impossible, but you have to be able to do it, especially in more remote settings. And Annalise, I think there's probably something generational in that. You know, the woman I was talking to this weekend, she's very suspicious of this push to work from home. She thinks employees don't want to be monitored. She thinks they want to sort of slack off. I would guess that she believes that sincerely, but I would guess that that is a more common belief among maybe older Americans, less so maybe among millennials and Gen Z. That's just a guess. What do you think, Anna?
I agree, Evan. As a millennial who moved back to Rochester after grad school, and then I moved away and came back after some other work experiences, pre-pandemic, I remember always having this mindset of like, wow, Rochester, you know, our employer base is kind of living in a different era where I think Ralph just made the point of like, you know, your attendance is a proxy for your attention. Butts in seats means that you're productive,
mm-hmm.
but your productivity should speak for itself. There is really no line between your personal life and your working life anymore. You know, unfortunately, my productivity should be measured by, my work should speak for itself. And I wanted to point out too, because obviously there's, as a result of the pandemic, there is so much uncertainty about workforce management and commercial real estate. But there was an article in New York Magazine, Justin Davidson writes for them on architecture. And he mentioned that, I'm just trying to find the quote from him. He said, all the prognostications about who will want to work where or commute and how often when the current misery lifts is based on effective forecasting, the notoriously inexact practice of predicting how we will feel and what decisions we will make when circumstances change. Humans who have a hard time even remembering joy when they're sad or pain when they're content are terrible at projecting their emotions and desires into the future. So we really don't know what the future has in store for us, and we have to kind of look back and see when crises like this one have taken place, you know, in history. How did we react? What were the long-term impacts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Let me get Matt in Canandaigua on the phone. First up, go ahead, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Evan. So I wanted to specifically just bring up, talk about retail. I necessarily don't think it's – I think the pandemic is actually more being used as an excuse with the slowdown, because I can remember years before the pandemic happened, you know, Macy's closing, Toys R Us, and I think we're not addressing the elephant in the room, which is automation and AI that is through Amazon and online shopping that is basically decimating the retail industry, which has been one of the more common jobs for all Americans, that is that we're kind of just kicking the can down the road and not addressing. I wondered what your guests with their expertise think about that subject.
Does that mean, Matt in Canandaigua, that you're still part of the Yang Gang?
Oh, you know it. You know it. I still got hope.
Well, he may be the next mayor of New York City, and that'd be very interesting to see.
Very well, maybe,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Matt. I mean, on a list, let me start with you. I mean, he's making a fair point here. The pandemic is not what sparked a collapse in retail or a move to online sales, a concern about malls, for example. I mean, the good folks at Wilmorite have been on this program talking to us about the realities that they face, what they are trying to do to not only either maintain mall space as we have always known it, maybe reimagine it, and we're seeing that. But I think Matt's making a fair point. I mean, how do you see it, Anna?
I think he's spot on. I myself scratch my head thinking, you know, the millennials of Monroe County, our parents, we grew up with our parents talking about how wonderful it was to go to Sibley and Midtown Mall back when they were growing up. Some of us ourselves have memories from the 80s going there, and then fast forward, you know, a decade, and our useful experiences with retail locally were quite different. We were mall rats. And now you've got kids not leaving their bedrooms, you know, socializing with one another via gaming or online, and they're shopping online. You know, we have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of square feet of retail space throughout this metropolitan area, with the malls representing a significant chunk of all of that. And I scratch my head thinking about what would adaptive reuse look like for those spaces. Right now, like I mentioned earlier, we're working on a senior housing project going in at the Marketplace Mall location in the town of Irondequoit, the Irondequoit Mall. There's a community center going in, some senior housing, some medical space. URMC is building out some space at Marketplace. So you're looking at the major investments at the mall locations are not retail. It's Eds and Meds and senior housing and, you know, community services.
Evan Galena, how do you see that question?
Well, I think the pandemic has certainly accelerated the decline in retail. There's no question about that. And you look at the food and bev industry, I mean, that's just been destroyed practically. So it's an interesting point, though. And I think Anna makes a good point. The retail experience has changed over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, Anna, going back to the mall days, right? You go through the mall and you're there for 4 hours and you go in all these different stores, and that's a really great experience. And now it's, you go in one store, you get your thing, or you go online and you're online for 5 minutes and 2 days later a package shows up, and that's great. But, you know, it's challenging, and I certainly feel for all the workers in the retail industry. But how do we adjust as a city and from a real estate standpoint? Well, you look at, you know, what Wilmorite's done with some of the adaptive reuses, and you get creative with these spaces and you try to figure out ways to make the most out of them. And kudos to a lot of those folks that have done that. But it's certainly a challenge.
Yeah, and let me bring Ralph back in, CEO of ITX Corporation, on this. I think at the core of this is a question about what is inevitable, whether it's in workspaces or even in our own habits, Ralph. I mean, you know, when we think about buying online, for example, so I have never bought more online than I have in the last year, just for the obvious reasons of a pandemic. And I've just never been that person who wants to order on Amazon, but I have, and it's so easy. And yet I always feel a little guilty every time a package shows up. I think, do I need to do this anymore? Like, can I go get these shoes in person? Should I go down to MedVed? Should I go somewhere? And it hits me that my choice could have an impact. But then I think, I don't know, is it inevitable that if you give people the option of doing everything remotely, that they will do that? Or can we make a collective push against it? In the same way when it comes to a workforce, can we talk about a civic responsibility all we want while, you know, maybe acknowledging the reality that there are some employees who will demand this, who will want this, who will go somewhere where they can get it? I don't know if we can change some of these forces, Ralph. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I think history is replete with examples of companies that tried to go against what the market was demanding. We have some of those examples here in Rochester, unfortunately.
Kodak. Film is awesome. Know,
there is a direction. It's usually in the way of more efficiency. People choose to order on Amazon because it's easier, because you don't have to spend the travel time. You don't have to spend the gas. You don't have to do anything. You just get online, you order it, and it shows up. Amazon has taken away a lot of retail jobs, but it's also created a lot of jobs in terms of warehousing and delivery services. I think there's always a balance that we seek as new technologies come out. So it is possible to work remotely now in a way that it was not possible 20 or 30 years ago. We're going to see us looking for ways to be more efficient. And like I said before, it's not a binary question of whether someone's remote or not. It's usually, even if we have a person, say, that works for our company that lives in Memphis, Tennessee, and we don't have an office in Memphis, Tennessee, and we don't have any other employees there, they can still be co-located sometimes because they can come to a place where there are people. So they either go to clients, or if they spend a week here in Rochester, they're 2% co-located. So we look at it in terms of what percentage of the time are you located with other people. The real value that you get out of people being co-located occurs early on, like within the first 50% of the time that you're together. Once you get past 75%, there's no real value to being co-located more than that. So what we're finding is it doesn't make sense to be in the office all the time, but it does make sense to be in the office sometimes. And that percentage depends really on the type of job that you're doing. If you're HR meeting with people, doing physical interviews, then you're going to be in the office. If you're a finance person processing checks that came in the mail, but even that's going away because everything's being done electronically. So we're seeing that, you know, different jobs have different requirements. Some can be almost 100% remote. Others have to be 100% in person. And there's most jobs, I think, are in the middle. And what we're doing is we're making sure that we're providing adequate space. And the way we've designed our offices is so that it's really more for some people being here all the time, more people being here half time, and then a much larger number of people being here as visitors. So much that we even have an apartment in the building where people can stay overnight if they're in town visiting the office.
Wow.
Employees from other places. So it's really more of finding the right place on the spectrum as opposed to, you know, pushing for, arguing for one or the other.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very forward-looking, and that's exactly why we invited the guests we did this hour, as we look ahead to the future of office space, especially post-pandemic, based on what workers want, based on the way our habits are maybe changing, not just because of the pandemic. And after our only break, I'm going to come back to your phone calls. Edie and Brighton, stay there. I'll get you next. And then, boy, we've got a deluge of emails. I mentioned earlier that we're going to talk a little bit about the Aqueduct and Xerox Tower as possibly reimagined spaces, with Annalise, Director of Planning and Economic Development for Monroe County, Evan Galena with Galena Development, Ralph Dandria, the CEO of ITX Corporation. And we are right back to your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg caused some controversy recently when he said that racism is baked right into America's highways. How can you make a roadway out of racism, his critics said. Well, historians and people displaced by policies like urban renewal pushed back and said apparently this country needs better information about our own history. And we'll talk about that next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and here come the emails about open workspaces. All right, listeners, we'll do a show sometime soon about open space work environments, and I want to hear from as many people as want to share their experience. Do you like it? Do you do it? Are you going back to it? Was it an experiment that worked? Was it an experiment that did not work? Does it drive you crazy? We'll talk about that in the future, I promise. Let me get Edie in Brighton. Go ahead, Edie.
Hi. I haven't been on the radio in a really long time. I guess I'm listening to this conversation. I'm really grateful that it's occurring, but and I wonder if there's a way to have a conversation about these structures as a public resource and to just sort of widen the conversation. So to be specific, we don't go to the office and we don't shop in stores. When do we ever talk to anyone in person who we don't already know? And how does that impact the racial divide, the economic divide that we have in our country and in our community very, very starkly? I just feel like that's part of what the built environment does for us is create these opportunities. It's been a long time that you could feel the shift in the ability to have conversations with people you don't know. Because of the way some businesses do work, you don't know the person behind the counter, et cetera. But this has become really profound. And during Black Lives Matter, I just thought, I'm locked in a white box because I'm not going to work. Because in my workplace, we were we worked across all sorts of divides. It's just that part of the conversation. And I guess just in terms of opening the context, I don't think this adds to solutions. It just makes it harder. But women mainly and men who care for the children have been working in the home and continue to work in the home. And they also have needs that can be met by public buildings. It's a long time that I look at the empty office space in downtown, less so now than, you know, over the last 20 years, and thought, how could that space be utilized to meet the needs of homemakers who often experience profound isolation? So there's just so many components to built environment that isn't a part of this. I guess the very last thing is, how does our tax structure and speculative real estate impact our racial divide, our economic divide? And there's been a lot of conversations about that. And I think that you can't separate the pie. We're one organism. Just the way looking at only the heart or the eye is suboptimal medical care. And I'm done.
Edie, thank you. Good example of why we've got the smartest listening audience of any talk show anywhere. It's a lot of really valuable points there. And I will first say, Edie, on the subject of homemakers, that is work. That is very, very valuable work. The question on connection and finding sort of built environment outlets is probably its own conversation, but I'm not trying to separate it out. I mean, you're right. This is all connected. And, you know, there are, I think, ripple effects here that go a long, long way out. And it is not just about X amount of square feet here, X amount of square feet there. It is absolutely about social connection. It is about, you know, sort of the bubbles we build. It's about the impact on other businesses nearby. So, Edie, I'm grateful for the call there. And Anna, if you could just say a few things about what you heard from Edie there, I think that's valuable. And I'm sure you're thinking about that with your partners in government and partners in the private sector, because I think she's right. I think every time we think about, sort of foreclosing more office space or whatever the case is, the impact is farther than just that physical space.
Yeah, I'm really glad Edie called in. She hits the nail on the head. A metric that we don't often track in economic development, community development, is the impact of community cohesion and creative collisions. I think with everyone isolated in their homes and, we're shutting down collaborative office spaces, we're shutting down retail environments where people otherwise might come together. We're exacerbating issues of equity. And when Evan mentioned earlier, like, oh, yeah, we used to go to the mall, spend a few hours there, go in and out of stores, I remember I was feeling a little nostalgic. I was like, I remember those days and how fun that was just to spend an afternoon kind of meandering around. And I think we're all thirsty for that. I don't think that that's going to go away forever.
Lewis writes to say, I would think it would be much less expensive to allow your employees to work from home. Office space is very expensive. And as an added bonus, your employees can save transportation costs and deduct some of their at-home work expenses from their taxes. I want all three of our guests to kind of weigh in on this because I think there's different threads here in Lewis's email. First of all, on a list, when it comes to working from home, if that is the trend here, is the concern about tax rolls overstated, or is that a big issue for local governments?
It's not yet a big issue for local governments.
Could it be?
Yeah, I think eventually in the somewhat near term and into the long term, it will be, because workers who are relegated to working from home are going to have to become accustomed to treating their home office space as they're going to have to track that on their tax forms. And then also, we as a county and a government, you know, looking at our, when we're marketing ourselves to companies for expansions and relocations, we're touting our workforce, our existing workforce here in this area. And, I think it's interesting, ITX is, you know, based here, headquartered here, has a significant workforce here, but also ITX's employment is sourced from all over the world. And so do we then factor those remote workers into our workforce? And you know, what about all the folks that live in Greater Rochester who are working remotely for blue chip companies like Google or other, you know, I know plenty of people, I'm sure many of your listeners do, who work for businesses that don't have a brick and mortar presence in Rochester, who work fully remote. So it's just an interesting, very 2021 type of a situation.
And if we see on the continuing shift for downtown office spaces, or office spaces really anywhere. I mean, you mentioned Henrietta, other parts of the city that are not downtown, whatever the case is. Are you concerned that local eateries nearby, coffee shops, small businesses, workers who rely on them, staff who work in those buildings, is there also a ripple effect beyond just that space that could hurt the economy?
Yes, yes. I think small business owners rely on foot traffic, and where there's less foot traffic, there's less consumer demand. And I think, you know, the Galenas are really a pioneer, and they have been for some years pre-pandemic in transforming our legacy real estate downtown, because Rochester's had that issue of, you know, a distributed workforce beyond the central business district for years and years and years. You know, Kodak, Xerox, Bausch & Lomb were in decline for a long time, and we had lots and lots of real estate that was unaccounted for, and so they've been working on some creative visions pre-pandemic that I hope will bear fruit, you know, after we get on the other side of this.
Well, and in a moment, I'm going to ask Evan Galena to talk about, for example, Xerox Tower. But before that, let me just ask Ralph if you can weigh in on Lewis's comment that this is a cheaper solution for companies, that you don't have to pay for the office space, that you don't have to pay for parking for employees, that working from home is a good deal for them, but it's also a good deal for you. Is that true?
It's partially true. I mean, those are factors that go into account when you're thinking about what things are going to cost. But it doesn't completely make, you know, if there's no way to control productivity or face-to-face communication is required, then it doesn't matter what the cost is, really. And the higher those costs, the more people are going to avoid the office environments. But I think it's not about really whether or not we're going to have spaces for people to congregate. The real question is, what do those spaces look like? And what I like about what the Galenas are doing is they're putting together lots of different types of uses into the same facility so that you can see different things going on. Like the plans for the old Xerox Square, you know, there's a university component, there's office, there's residential, you know, there's all different ways that people can connect. And there will be an ecosystem around it with restaurants and other things that we're concerned about that will be there to service it. I just think, though, that it's a lot easier to think about, instead of trying to force people to do something they otherwise wouldn't, like go back to the office or work from home or whatever, I think it's easier to figure out what are the forces that are at play and how does Rochester lean into that. I, for one, can say I'm not in Rochester because my job is here. I could make my job anywhere I want. I'm here because this is a great place for quality of life for a family. You know, this is a place I raise my kids. We have so many great resources in Rochester, from healthcare to education to culture. And so that's all here in Rochester. And I think we need to rely on that, the quality of life, as a way to attract people to our city and not force them to come here because their job makes them.
Yeah. And so, Evan Galena, as Galena takes a look at, for example, Xerox Tower, on a list talked about legacy Rochester companies and spaces. Tell us about what's happening at Xerox Tower.
Absolutely. So we purchased the former Xerox Tower back in September with this idea to make it a collaborative campus in the heart of our downtown, kind of focusing on innovation and bringing students to our center city. You know, Rochester is a college town on paper, and you have 0.2% of the students in Rochester actually in our urban center. So our idea was, how do we connect our talent pool to the local businesses and kind of close that ecosystem with the long-term goal of, you know, stopping the brain drain that we've faced for the last 20 years, where students come from out of town, they get educated in our city, and then they leave. Then they go to Chicago, New York, Boston, you know, what have you, where there's great opportunities in our city if we can just get them to fall in love with our city sooner. For example, you know, students could go to RIT for 4 years, and at the end of the day, they think, you know, Jefferson Ave out in Henrietta is Rochester. Well, that's not Rochester. You know, the Moore Art Gallery, Jiva, all these other landmarks downtown, that's where our city is. So there's that whole component. It's also important, I think, for us, and this goes back to the comments that the caller just made. You know, we have a 700-person auditorium at Innovation Square. We are working on a speaker series to address a lot of these conversations that need to be had in our city. You know, pandemic aside, there's some issues going on culturally in our community, and those need to be addressed. And there needs to be a safe place for everyone to address those. So we want to promote conversation and ways that we can better our community as a whole.
You guys, as you said, took over that space, or you bought that space at Xerox in September, Evan?
That's correct.
How much of it was used and how much of it was unused at the time?
There's an accounting firm on two floors. Other than that, when Xerox left, they turned the lights off and they never came back. There's furniture, everything. They just left it. So we're in the process of completing phase one right now, which will be five floors of apartments for students. A big site overhaul that we're actually starting today, and then an amenity package including student lounge, fitness center, classrooms, soundproof practice rooms for musicians, study rooms, all sorts of stuff that we've kind of been focused on. And so phase two will be the remaining 10 floors of apartments, which will be completed in August of 2022. And so at the end of that, we'll have 500 students living there. And the end of phase one is August of this year. Excuse me, I didn't mention that.
When you say Xerox literally left the furniture, how many floors total is the building?
30 stories.
30 stories, and there were two stories in use and 28 empty?
That's correct.
Wow. Oh, my God. So, Anna, this has to be at least for you and your colleagues in government, this has to be a boon, you know, to government, to your efforts, because who wants a 28 out of 30 floors empty building anywhere? I mean, and I'm not trying to be flippant. That is Rochester. That is Cleveland. That is Chicago. That is everywhere. Is this an answer to that particular problem, at least for this building, Anna?
Yeah. Evan made the apt point that, you know, we are a college town and our economy quickly evolved from being a corporate headquarters town to a supply chain economy and a higher education destination. So it stands to reason that one of our iconic high rises downtown would be dedicated to, you know, would be repurposed to serve that demand. And I think, you know, Rochester's skyline, you look at the iconic buildings, Xerox Tower being one of them, the former Bausch & Lomb headquarters, which is now Legacy Tower. You look at the former Chase Manhattan Bank building, which is now the Metropolitan. And, you know, these were facilities. And Kodak Tower as well. Iconic high-rises, you know, that represent our skyline, which is our identity. It's part of our identity as Rochesterians. And these are all corporate headquarter high-rises that are now either no longer occupied by those corporations at all, or, you know, in the case of Kodak Tower, I know very, very small percentage of that facility is occupied by Eastman Kodak Company. So it's really symbolic to look at that skyline and really consider the major transformation. And companies like Galena, Buckingham Properties, et cetera, they're taking on huge risk. This is a lot of speculation about the future. All they can do is look ahead or look behind us, what trends have looked like in the past, and try to plan ahead for the future. We really don't know what the future has in store for us in Rochester. And so I commend, you know, the Galenas and other developers who are taking on a lot of risk, spending a lot of money, and trying to pave the way for a brighter future for our downtown.
Evan, do you know how long 28 out of 30 stories were empty? I mean, when did they vacate?
So Xerox vacated, going off memory here, but about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Buckingham owned the building at the time. So when we purchased it from them, you know, we kind of had an aggressive plan in line. But to put a number to it, the entire building is 580,000 square feet. So call it, you know, 560,000 square feet of vacancy. And that just puts a hole in your office market. I mean, it's just massive. So we just took the adaptive reuse approach and tried to figure out a way to revitalize this without undercutting the office market throughout our city. And, you know, we worked together with RIT, U of R, Nazareth, St. John Fisher, and everyone put our heads together. And this is kind of the end result. And, you know, fingers crossed, I think we're going to have a lot of success with it. And I think it's gaining some momentum. And we've got a lot of things happening there that I hope to share more with everyone in the next couple months. But we're very optimistic.
I got to say, though, Evan, like, whether it's Kodak, whether it's Vandalay Industries, whether it's Xerox, if somebody vacates a building, if they leave everything, what do you do with 28 floors worth of furniture? Does it just go on Craigslist? I am totally ignorant about this.
A lot on Craigslist. My sister has been in the furniture industry now since we bought the building, so I give her a lot of credit for trying to sell everything. Unfortunately, a lot of stuff goes in the dumpster.
Yeah.
We're on a tight timeline, and we just don't have time to move everything around and kind of try to get it to everyone. But, you know, we try to donate a lot of it to nonprofits and anything like that.
Sure, yeah. Okay, a couple quick questions from listeners, which I'll kick around to various panelists. One more on taxes, and I'll send this to Anna List. One listener was saying, Anna, that they think that there is no real concern for the tax base because most of these big office spaces are on sort of no-tax deals. Anna?
Well, that's not totally true. So if we're talking about the Industrial Development Agency, which grants property tax abatements and other incentives, what we do is we work with developers to make it more palatable for them to take on risk. So when Galena Development purchased Xerox Tower and projected ahead over 10, 15 years on the amount of the tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars that they're going to be spending on redevelopment of the property, what we do is we abate them on a specific schedule of the improvements in property taxes. So Xerox Tower, as it stands right now, is being taxed at its existing assessed value. And then as Galena invests more and more into the facility, those investments will result in an increased assessment, and we will discount the taxation on the increased assessment over a period of time. But then following a 10-year period, they're going to be paying property taxes on the full value of the property. So it's not as though we're saying you don't ever have to pay property taxes. It's more just we're trying to level the playing field.
Okay. And so the more we see office spaces go empty, we shouldn't just assume there's no tax impact. I mean, I take
right.
Bob, who emailed the point there, Bob, but there is going to be some. And Randy emails to say, as a retired baby boomer, I lived through the workforce where work from home was next to impossible before the internet. Having experienced the ability to work remotely, I have found it difficult to stay focused and not get distracted by being home. It was nice when the kids were young and I needed to be home when they were sick, but I needed the office for camaraderie and face-to-face interactions. And my guess is that the work from home is easier for younger workers who grew up with the internet. So I think it'll be a slow change as more older workers retire. Ralph, what do you think?
I don't know that I really have an answer to that. I think it's a wait and see. I know people do like the camaraderie. They do have different reasons for being in the office. Sometimes it's just because they have kids at home. and there's too much noise. But you know, there's a lot of different forces that are at work here, and I think we have to kind of watch how they play out and lean in the direction where they're leading us.
Yeah, and speaking of, I mean, that's what this whole conversation has been about. Where does the workforce want to go? Where are the forces taking us, and how do you make sure you're not sitting there trying to sell film when everybody else has digital? And that is what Ralph, Evan, and Anna are doing, and that's why we invited them this hour. Ralph is the CEO of ITX Corporation, and I'm grateful for your time. Thanks for making the time for this hour, Ralph. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Evan Galina with Galina Development. Please keep us apprised on not only Xerox Tower, but other projects like it, Evan. It's going to be very interesting to see what changes, especially in these iconic spaces, but everywhere. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Anna List, Director of Planning and Economic Development for Monroe County. A difficult job that I would not want, but I'm glad you take the time to tell us what's going on here. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate it, as always.
All right. More connections coming up in just a moment.